Good Vach. This is Yisachar Wartell, and we are up to now Parshat Chukat, or Chukas, as some people say. It is not Chukat Palak this year. That's right. We are not having really I don't, any double Parshas. It's the way the leap year orients it, and everything's going to be really late. But we have a lot of really, really cool things in this week's Parsha. Some good, some not so good, some intriguing. A lot to talk about. There's definitely a lot to talk about here. So we're going to get ourselves started, and we're going to talk about, I mean, a little bit the cryptic mitzvah Paraduma, which starts off this week's Dvar Torah, starts off this parsha, I mean, which we're going to talk about in our Dvar Torah today. And it entails using the ashes to purify somebody ritually contaminated by a corpse. And immediately following this, though, like obviously there's so much to talk about in the Paraduma, we'll get back to it. But right after the Paraduma, we have the death of Miriam HaNeviah, Moshe's sister. Now, what is the connection between these two matters? Rashi explains, based on the Gemara and Moed Katan, that just as the Parah Aduma creates atonement, so too the death of the righteous creates atonement. However, Rav Matthew Neuberger notes that, who is actually somebody who I referenced this week as well, that there's a debate between commentaries in which specifically what way the Parah Aduma affected atonement, as its primary purpose was not specifically atonement, but rather to remove tumas mace, which was impurity of death. Rabbi Neuberger then asks why specifically the Parah Aduma and not other karbanos, such as the chatas, the sin offering, are specifically juxtaposed to Miriam's death. And he gives a couple different answers, which are not going to be discussed right now, but definitely worth listening to. But he does confirm that the Parah Aduma does actually affect some level of atonement. So let's look into this further. The Siftei Chachamim points out that the Parah Aduma and the death of Tzaddikim are similar in that they affect atonement, without an actual altar sacrifice, because the red heifer, the paraduma, was actually burnt outside of the camp on the temple grounds and was not brought on a mizbeach, was not brought on an altar. However, there are also many other similarities, actually, between the paraduma and the death of Miriam, which at first you might not notice. In order for the paraduma ashes to be effective, they had to be mixed with mayim chayim, which is also something I talked about in my written dvar this week, living waters. This refers to water from a stream or other constantly flowing source, and they had to obviously make sure it never got contaminated, the buckets, people, etc. But although the death of Miriam occurs at the end of the 40-year period in the desert, it is clear that B'nai Yisrael had the mitzvah of Parah Aduma actually at the beginning of their journey, which again is part of a much longer discussion, exactly how the time frame shifts from like year 2 to year 39. I'm not going to get into that right now, but it's also something to think about. But we see, interestingly enough, that there's an inyan, there's an idea of purification a couple parshas earlier when we have Pesach Sheni. They lamented not being able to bring the Karban Pesach because they were tamei, they were ritually impure. And they were then afforded the ability to make up Karban Pesach a month later on Pesach Sheni. But how is that possible unless they had a meat? This was already after the Torah was given. How is that possible unless they would have had an ability to become purified from tumas mace, from corpse impurity? It must have been that they had the lesson of the Parah Aduma, and it's only here that the Torah actually records it. And indeed, Rav Chaim Berlin and others teach that the initial teaching of Parah Aduma was actually given at Marah, when Bnei Yisrael first lacked water, only 3 days after leaving Mitzrayim, so even before Matan Torah. There they had flowing water, which was initially bitter but became sweet, but it was not just capable to be used for drinking, but perhaps it may have been used, he suggests, it may have been used also for the Parah Aduma to mix with the ashes. After that, though, with the exception of stopping at Elim, there would not be a water source other than the rock. There would not be a water source in the desert for nearly 40 years. So this is actually part of a very, very interesting extension. But I'm going to talk about part of it today. But again, so many of these topics can be talked about at length, much more in length than 10 minutes. But the Be'er Miriam, many commentaries, including the Tzfas Emes and Chazal, many other commentaries of Chazal, and including I believe the Ramban and Tzfas Emes, they mentioned that the well of Miriam, which gave them the rock that gave them water in the desert, which is also in this week's Parsha, was in fact Mayim Chayim. Whether it came, as the Ramban explains, from a spring that came through the rock on some miraculous level, which again doesn't really make much sense, but again, that's a miracle for you, or whether it just flowed naturally from the rock, which again is an even bigger miracle. Either way, it was considered Mayim Chayim. The Jews had this miraculous well of water in the Zechus of Miriam. That's what Chazal learned. When she died, this miraculous well dried up, and hence the people complained, and then Moshe had to find a new rock, or possibly the same rock, it's not so clear, and then he had to, again, hit the rock, which he was supposed to speak to, in order to provide water for the people. Now,
The Sfas, as I mentioned, is one of many commentaries that also refers to the water from the rock as the Mayim Chaim. And therefore, when her life passed away, her Chaim was gone. Her legacy of Chaim, meaning Mayim Chaim, was also gone. The living waters that were through her merit were no longer, in a sense, living, right? They ceased. And if we didn't have Mayim Chaim, then how could we use the Para Aduma? We had the ashes still, presumably we had a collection of ashes, but we didn't have the Mayim Chaim to mix it with. So in addition to the fact that Klal Yisrael was obviously thirsty, we also needed water for the Para Aduma ashes. And of course, you know, probably mikvahs and other things like that, although that's not so clear how that worked back then. Rav Yitzchak Ginzburg explains that the pairing of the Para Aduma with the concept of Miriam and her well actually highlights two items that brought with them life-giving forces. When Miriam departed this world, these life-giving forces temporarily left, as I mentioned, right? Both as thirst-quenching water and the need to live, but also, as I mentioned, the water for the Para Aduma. Now, Moshe was to reinstate both of these in one instance by speaking to the rock, which would restore Miriam's well and everything that went with it. It's a life-giving promise in every respect, in order to make people be able to drink and physically give life, as well as spiritually give life and, from a ritual impurity standpoint, give life. But in a certain sense, it was impaired. Obviously, the water still came through, but by striking it, there was a certain life-giving force that was hindered or tempered with just a bit. The fact that it didn't come through tefillah or peaceful measures, depending on how you understand what it means to speak to the rock, but rather through technically an act of violence, which is hitting, and anger, which Moshe had in this particular instance, it wasn't as ideal. And therefore, the life that was given from the rock wasn't as pure of a life as it could have been. And that was something that Hashem had wanted. And again, obviously, commentaries, probably every commentary virtually talks about what the nature of Moshe's Avera was and whatever, and what it means that they could have, you know, they could have sanctified Hashem's glory, Aaron too, of course. And one of these things was, you know, the fact that when we need something which is so vital for us, right, we need it to be able to live, right? We need to be able to have water to live. And we also need water to be able to do all of the avoda, right? We need to be able to be ritually pure in order to do all of the avodas and the mishkan that they had to do, and, you know, as well as eat kachim and all these other, you know, things that they had to be pure. There were so many things. It was so dependent on it, and something which is so crucial to be able to access that through an act of anger and violence was not what Hashem wanted. And as numerous people point out, perhaps it's the reason Aaron was brought with, because Aaron was a man of shalom and not a man of conflict. Moshe was supposed to speak to it with Aaron, which was a peaceful way to get something which is so life essential. And it happened, unfortunately, in a way which was less than ideal. So they still got the life-giving force. They still got what they needed, but it wasn't delivered in the most ideal manner. So may we strive to not only seek out things that we need for our lives and things that we can use to help ourselves and to help others and to be able to allow ourselves and others to live and thrive, but to seek out whatever we need to do this without strife and anger and as little as conflict as possible, and to only bring with this life the flow of blessing. Wishing you all an amazing Shabbat Shalom.